This is the Propanon Podcast. Tune in.
Open your fucking ears, jackass.
Today's guests are Dr. Rachel Turetsky and Douglas Wingate, Doctor of Chinese Medicine, the authors of the recently released book, Eighth Circuit Ascension, A Guide to Metaprogramming the Multidimensional Self, published by Original Falcon Press. Rachel and Douglas's book explores the Eighth Circuit brain model that Timothy Leary and Robert Anton Wilson created in the 1970s, while synthesizing the model with new studies in neuroscience and psychedelics. The book also integrates the ideas of Arturo Ali, Stanislav Grof, and the holonomic brain theory with current research in developmental psychology. Rachel and Doug have spent years working in the psychedelic-assisted therapy field, and their experience shines through in the book and our interview. Working in such spaces has allowed them to speak new life into the Eighth Circuit brain model and provides inspiration for future researchers. Perhaps the most interesting aspect of Rachel and Doug's take on the Eighth Circuit brain model is their emphasis on the regulation of the nervous system and healing dysregulation. Although Wilson touched on this in his work, Turetsky and Wingate have updated the map, so to speak, making their work an important contribution to current psychological developmental theories. And now, here's the interview. So, I read the book, really, really enjoy it. I think it's a great time for a work to come out that centers the Eighth Circuit model of intelligence, or the Eighth Circuit brain model. And I think you guys did a really great job at doing so. And but it's been a while, maybe, for those who are not too familiar with the that map of consciousness it's been a little while since people have kind of, you know, maybe heard the name, even Eighth Circuit brain model. So would either one of you just want to fill the listeners in a little bit about what exactly the Eighth Circuit brain model is?
So the Eighth Circuit model or Eighth Circuit brain model is something that was originally developed by Timothy Leary following his work at Harvard with the psychedelic research and taking a look at different models of consciousness. There were some early editions that had seven stages and then developed into eight circuits, as he called them. And that was with close work and correspondence with Robert Anton Wilson. So they kind of co-brainstormed on a lot of this model. And so Leary put it out initially as some brief articles laying out just kind of this framework that he was trying to use to make sense of the human experience as far as consciousness goes, and especially in his book Exopsychology, taking a look at sort of a developmental or evolutionary model of the human nervous system and human consciousness. So he developed this model, put it out there. And then over the years, Robert Anton Wilson built on that, put out an amazing book, Prometheus Rising, which was my introduction to it, and then continued to develop with the work of Arturo Ali. And since then, it's just continued to sort of evolve. And so we approach this sort of looking back and saying reintroducing the model to a lot of people who may not have been introduced to it before. And also, what is developed and is it still relevant here 50 years after Leary initially developed it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Is it because Exopsychology came out in the late 70s and it's been a number of years since then. And Rachel, have you in your time in your studies, you got your PhD in what school of medicine again was it?
So it's in clinical psychology with an emphasis in depth psychology. And it was at a depth psychology school called Pacifica Graduate Institute.
So did the Eighth Circuit brain model come up at all in that realm of study? Or was that something that you brought in sort of outside of the academy into your studies?
No. So that was actually sort of what inspired the writing of the book altogether. I've been working with, I'm sure you're familiar with the MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelics.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been working with them since 2012. And so, and at the time, much like the Eighth Circuit model, psychedelics was very fringe and you were really not supposed to talk about your interest in things like consciousness and psychedelics. It was considered academic suicide. And, you know, just my personality type was like, yeah, I'm into all these things I'm not supposed to be. And so I was just diving in. And then it was fast forward to around, it was August of 2017 when MAPS was, you know, I work with them on their MDMA PTSD studies. And they had just gotten, you know, the FDA gave them, what was it called, breakthrough status. And they were on the, at the time anyway, the fast track to be, have the MDMA assisted therapy approved by the FDA. And then shortly after that, Michael Pollan released his book, How to Change Your Mind. And then with that, and that was like 2018. And so with that, all of a sudden now psychedelics were on like the New York Times and like just everywhere mainstream. And, you know, being coming from a place of like psychonauts and the occult, you know, I'd been familiar with the eight circuit model. And I was able to kind of see that like, wow, this framework would be amazing if it was to, you know, it came from academia in a sense that it needed to return there and for clinical practice and for, you know, individuals seeking, you know, healing and exploration with psychedelics, you know, approached by different people who were, had never maybe had psychedelic experiences before and were just kind of diving in because they're hearing about all these amazing things with psychedelics. And so it just felt like, okay, this is something that needs to kind of come out of the fringes and be brought out, which fast forward, that's so our David J. Brown, who wrote our foreword, I was actually originally supposed to write the book with him. And we had met in person for the first time just before the lockdowns. And then, of course, with that, it just he had a lot of stuff going on in his personal life. But in that period, you know, we started researching who else had books out on the eight circuit model. It was very limited. And that's how we found Doug. He had his book, Circuits in Shen, that he had already written relating the eight circuit model to Chinese medicine. And then once we became acquainted with Doug, we brought him onto the project. And it's, you know, Doug has been just so, Doug wears many hats and it does superhuman amount of just work in so many different interdisciplinary fields and really came in and helped to move this project forward in like just countless ways. So that's sort of, you know, and he also does the psilocybin facilitation and also experienced that where in his training, there was no real framework for working with these non-ordinary states of consciousness. So there was really a gap in this applying this type of framework to those experiences. So that's sort of what inspired this whole project.
Yeah. I think that's a really nice way to put it, especially since yes, psychedelics have exploded, I guess, on the mainstream. And I suppose it really was that book, that Michael Pollan's book, that really, you know, put it on the map, if you will, no pun intended. And Doug, yeah, I remember coming across your book and I thought it was super interesting. The one you wrote previously, the one that Rachel was just speaking about, Eight Circuits and Shen. And, do you mind telling us a little bit about, you know, how that notion came about? Cause I find that, as I said, very interesting, the intersection between Chinese medicine now and this eight circuit model. How did that come about?
Yeah, well, it came about because, I mean, that's my career, right? And so I have a Chinese medical practice. I've since integrated in clinical neuroscience and really focus on neuro rehab. So I'm a brain neuro geek for sure. But as I was working through a lot of material, I started actually teaching small groups for around the eighth circuit brain model just for psychonauts here in the Portland area who were interested and knew that I had worked with that model or that I had in some way integrated it into the way that I approach working with people. So I started teaching these groups and it was one of those things like as I was putting the material together, it just grew into more and more material and ties that I had been making over the years since, you know, originally you know, I was exposed to eight circuit model when I was like 16 or 17 when I found Prometheus Rising, and then got the amazing opportunity to study with Bob through the Maybe Logic Academy and then with Ontero a couple times. And so all of the connections that I had made from some of those, as you know, some of those amazing conversations that happened in the Maybe Logic Academy, and then also within my Chinese perspective. And I'm definitely one of those that likes to pull from a lot of different directions and find where those overlaps are and how those things may complement each other. And, you know, it's not unknown information that Leary was privy to a lot of Eastern philosophy. I mean, he did a translation of the Tao Te Ching. He did a translation of the I Ching, and I Ching was woven into a number of his works. And so it had always intrigued me, like, where exactly that overlap is. And since I'm working with people with their health and wellness, like, how you can weave that all together. And so it just started from those classes where I was putting pamphlets together of material that I would teach on a weekly basis. And then it just got to the point where I was like, holy shit, I mean, I basically have a book here. I might as well put it out and see, you know, if it resonates with anybody, and for anybody working in the Chinese medicine realm or interested in Chinese or Eastern philosophy, you know, it ties in some of the chakra system and some of Reich's work in bioenergetics and somatic psychotherapy and different correlations there and how you can actively work with those sorts of things. So it was really born out of me being a big nerd and putting together a bunch of material that ultimately just ended up being a book that I didn't necessarily intend to turn into a book. It just worked out that way.
And again, that's another thing I should add about your guys' book. I really, really appreciate the new additions to the you know, the model, right? It's from Antero Ali's additions, but also then the holonomic theory of consciousness, and of course, you know, Stanislav Grof, right, which we'll get into. But firstly, I just wanted to ask, what did Ali bring to the eight circuit brain model that both of you thought was significant enough to include in your own book?
Yeah, well, we've both had an opportunity to take the course through Ontario. I've taken it a couple times, and Rachel has taken it as well. So cool. I don't know, Rachel, do you want to talk about some of the contributions Ontario has made that?
Yes, sure. So he really helped to transform it into a more practical model as a tool for really understanding and working with different parts of the self. He expanded on, I believe Leary was actually the first person to talk about verticality, but he, I think, really deepened into that and helped to understand the relationship between the lower circuits and which actually, you know, maybe swing back to, for people who aren't familiar, as we were talking about what the eight circuit model is,
yeah,
make more sense for those who don't know. So the lower circuits are, they basically, you take any type of developmental psychology, and it's sort of like a framework that it maps onto perfectly. So it's the typical human development throughout the lifespan, starting from circuit one is having to do with survival. It's imprinted in infancy. Circuit two has to do with the emotions and boundaries and territory, and your role in social hierarchy. Circuit three has to do with symbolic thought, language, meaning making. Circuit four has to do with social and sexual roles, and institutions and morality. And then you get into the upper circuits, which have to do with more transpersonal experiences and non-ordinary states of consciousness. So circuit five has to do with sort of like getting into pleasure for the sake of itself. Circuit six is the metaprogramming circuit and the intentional rewiring of your own nervous system, questioning of your beliefs, and basically intentionally developing your, quote unquote, as Leary called them, reality tunnels and how you experience the world. Circuit seven has to do with like what Jung called like the archetypes, or these non-ordinary states of consciousness where like psi phenomena happen, these altered states of like telepathy, like astral projection and these exceptional experiences not typically, you know, necessarily accepted in Western psychology, but, you know, there's a lot of, you know, evidence for and people have experiences of. And circuit eight is like things like near-death experiences, non-dual states of consciousness, lucid dreaming, and things of that nature. So just to kind of touch upon that first so that this makes a little more sense, going back to your question about, you know, so this idea of verticality, and that's the mapping of the relationship between the lower circuits with the upper circuits and how the lower circuits can act as a ground for the upper circuit experiences and different shocks that might happen, or the uppers, like things like psychedelics can be very destabilizing, or having a spontaneous, like a, as they call it, like a Kundalini experience. But, and those can be grounded in the lower circuits, which is important so that, you know, it's like a spiritual, it could be very fun experience if it's a spiritual emergence versus, you know, a very scary experience, which they call like a spiritual emergency. So it can help to ground that type of a thing. Whereas the upper circuits and having a psychedelic experience or one of these other types of awakenings of these psycho-spiritual parts of the self can also help to break through some of these more rigid patterns in the lower circuits and different types of pathologies. They can kind of help to balance each other. So Antero really helped, I think, to develop that, and also his focus on praxis and really encouraging practical application of the model through different exercises. Mm-hmm. The idea of treadmilling, in which one might get stuck in a particular circuit and how to work through that. And as you were saying earlier, Gabe, was how, you know, Leary, when he was developing the model, maybe he was a little more focused on the psycho-spiritual states and the psychedelic states, whereas Antero was more focused on the lower circuits in a sense, in terms of really focusing more on embodiment and somatic experience.
Antero really emphasized personal ritual and brought that into, like you said, that praxis with the eight circuit model. Just incredible work as far as really embodying portions of the model.
What did Stanislav Grof bring to the table that, you know, both of you find extremely significant to now incorporate and include in your representation of the eight circuit brain model?
Yeah. I mean, we definitely worked on bringing in Grof's contributions and all of his amazing work. It kind of came in on both ends of the spectrum as far as the eight circuit model goes, because his exploration with LSD and his development of holotropic breath work as well, in order to get into an altered state and be able to access these more transpersonal states of consciousness. But there's kind of a tie-in within those states that people get into where they have re-experiencing of early developmental life events, life experiences. And so with that, people under the influence of LSD or in an altered state as a result of holotropic breath work, whatever it may be, will sort of re-experience past events during gestation or early life or prenatal or perinatal experiences. And so Grof developed what he called the perinatal matrices, basic perinatal matrices. And so we brought both of those components, Grof's findings, both as it comes to the more expansive transpersonal states, and then those prenatal, perinatal experiences that people will either re-experience in those altered states or that have just been more and more scientifically validated over the last couple decades in terms of the massive influence that one's environment during gestation, during early development, and around birth, the birthing experience, how that impacts one's nervous system and development of the nervous system, that can have all of these massive influences on further development into adulthood, you know, making, if there are a lot of traumas or stressful events or problematic issues that come up, even if it's related to the mother during gestation, it can influence the development of the endocrine system, which can throw off hormonal balances all into adulthood. It's been shown to potentially make people more prone to chronic illness and things like that, the development of chronic illness. And so we brought in that component as well. And in our book, that was a new delineation that we made in the 8-circuit model that we called Circuit Zero. We did that really just to give it a platform because it wasn't something that had been explicitly discussed too much in the previous 8-circuit model work. It's not that we were proposing that the model was incomplete in any sense, but as you probably know, Tim Leary had sort of three different phases within each one of the circuits. There's the receptive phase that somebody goes through. As you start to activate a particular circuit, you become very receptive to new information. And then there's the second phase of integration. So you start processing that and figuring out what it means and what to do with it. And then there's the transmission subphase where you are able to take that information, really embody it and move it outward and be able to express that and kind of make it your own. And so Circuit Zero really correlates to the receptive phase of what would be considered Circuit One, that biosurvival circuit where it's all around safety. But during that prenatal, perinatal, it's all incoming information. There's, you know, everything is being filtered by the mother's nervous system. And it's just, you're in a womb just receiving this information without a whole lot of interaction with an external environment.
I would just share I don't know if it's still available online, but Doug and I both had the opportunity to take an online course. I think it was through the Shift Network, where it was Stanislav Grof and Rick Tarnas. It's called Archetypal Astrology, and they broke it down really nicely. It was a course that they had taught together at CIIS, the California Institute of Integral Studies, where they also offered certifications in working with psychedelics as well. But I just wanted to add that piece. But otherwise, that was stated.
So Circuit Zero, I just want to just focus on this still. So Leary puts that into the receptive phase, and the part of Grof's framework that would incorporate in Circuit Zero would be these BPMs, right? But Grof's model is interesting too, because people will not just experience under heavy psychedelic states these in utero experiences. They'll have spontaneous experiences of identification with archetypical figures. Maybe it's Jesus, maybe it's Lao Tzu, maybe it's cross-cultural. And yeah. Grof mapped this as a, as well as post-biographical or a transpersonal state. Would you say that then this area of Grof's mapping, when people are experiencing these sort of archetypical areas, or another way to put this, where does Circuit Six, the metaprogramming circuit, say intersect with the Grof model of consciousness?
Circuit Six is, we kind of consider the crux of the model in terms of the way that we approach it, because Circuit Six is the metaprogramming circuit, and that is the conscious intentional rewiring of one's nervous system, questioning one's belief systems and experience of reality. And so by applying this model, as whether you're doing it from a magical occult perspective, self-help perspective, or facilitating this for somebody else, as a, whether it's a guide working with psychedelics or other types of spiritual practices, you're sort of at the helm of Circuit Six. So just really wanting, that's sort of where we take this, is that's a kind of the lens through which we approach this model in a practical application.
Yeah. So when it comes to kind of reapproaching yourself and working on conscious healing, tapping into at least that circuit six metaprogramming realm opens up that possibility for sort of what we've come to term applied metacognition. You know, you're thinking about the way that you're thinking about things, or you're being consciously aware of your reality tunnels, the way that you perceive the world, and also a recognition that if you're able to take a look at that and think about the way that you're thinking, you can then think in different ways. You can make the conscious decision to reevaluate. Bringing it back to Groff real quick, is it phylogenetic consciousness that he termed?
I believe so, yeah.
That would fit more into that circuit six, circuit seven realm. Mm-hmm. And then we also relate his work around, I believe it was the superconscious states that he associates with some of the LSD experiences, that would fit more into like a circuit eight, non-dual transpersonal ego dissolution type state. It's been really incredible now that I'm able to do that work. You know, I'm in Oregon where psilocybin is legal, and I'm a licensed psilocybin facilitator. So I have the opportunity to hold space for while people are journeying. And it's been really astounding how often that comes up as a theme, just like a birthing process or a rebirthing. So people feel like they're even where it's conscious, like they're aware that I'm reliving my birth process. You know, it may be really metaphoric, like you said, where you've got the spiders coming in and it's just this fear response. And other times it's very literal as far as what their trip is. And I can't tell you how many people will do groups and how many people have described their experience as being rebirthed or giving birth during their psychedelic journey. So like a theme that's come up over and over again is I gave birth to the world. And like, this is, you know, a deep, profound experience that they're going through. And they feel like that's what they're doing during their session. And a lot of healing, a lot of work can happen with that.
Where people feel like they're giving birth to themselves.
Yeah.
You come across that?
I have.
Mm. It's funny when you see a dude like he's in like the birthing myself, man.
Yeah,
but it happens.
It definitely happens. Yeah,
there's and, also an mm-hmm. term, a Jungian term called enantiodromia. It's a little bit of a side topic, but related to this is some of these really difficult experiences where you know you go so far into one side of an experience that you kind of come out the other side. So when you have a really challenging experience, if you're able to safely feel like you can go into that space, that once you process all of that, you sort of come out and shed, in a sense, this, it's, you know, it's like a pendulum that just sort of like you went so far that it kind of like flipped around to the other side.
Yeah. Built into Eastern philosophy too. It's called yin converting to yang or yang converting to yin. If you go too so far to an extreme, you end up on the other side.
Rachel, what you said is very significant, though, and it should be mentioned within this talk, you know, the notion of set and setting, but also, you know, the importance of creating a safe space for people to go extremely deep because, you know, the explosion of psychedelics in the 60s and then even as it played out over the, you know, the last, you know, in the 90s, say like 30 years after, you know, there was just today. I mean, psychedelics is a recreational drug, you know, our recreational drugs. I don't know about these DMT pens, though. I'm not really a fan of this stuff, man. I don't think you could hang out at a party and smoke a DMT pen. And like,
I definitely couldn't,
you know, the use of psychedelics to, you know, alleviate addictions, right? I mean, Rachel, you worked with MAPS, with the MDMA. I'm curious about that with the MDMA experience, experiments. And I'll ask you about that right now, Rachel, I guess, was that MAPS MDMA, trial? I followed it kind of loosely. What that was MDMA given to like, soldiers with PTSD or something like that, or what was all that?
Participant was either a veteran or a sexual assault survivor. Basically when they started the study, to get the study approved, it had to be people who had such extreme PTSD that they had tried so many different types of therapy that nothing worked on them, which is why the results also were so significant, because these are people with, like, some of the people who participated in the study couldn't even leave their homes, couldn't work. And the fact that through phase one, phase two, depending on at which point they were looking at the data, it was between about two-thirds to about 75% of the participants no longer even met diagnostic criteria for PTSD. People who could not leave their homes were able to now leave their homes. People who could not work were able to go out and work. I'm not sure if they've been published since then. There were people looking more at the qualitative data, so that even if, say, people still met the diagnostic criteria for PTSD, they shared how their lives were so qualitatively transformed, where, you know, even if they still had PTSD, it was manageable, you know, for many of these people. So, it was pretty amazing.
That's major. Yeah, especially as, you know, an alternative to all these, antidepressants, medications and stuff like that. And how many people do we know in our lives that think, man, you should go to one of these LSD sessions or these psychedelic assisted therapy sessions, because sadly you'll see them stuck in their ways and you're like, it's so hard to watch, you know.
About this model and why I also, when I was envisioning writing this book in the first place, because psychedelics have an amazing potential, but then especially as they kind of exploded into the mainstream, there sort of was this like mantra of psychedelics as panacea, you know, where it's going to heal everything, it's going to fix everything. And so it's only one piece of a bigger puzzle. And so the eight circuit model, I feel like, you know, helps you to zoom out of that myopia where you can sort of see, okay, this is where it fits in, or different types of psychedelics or other things, your spiritual practices might fit in. It's a great tool to, or framework to assess. Doug and I are working on an assessment tool as well, so you can kind of gauge where you're at in each circuit and what you want to focus on. And in the book, as you probably saw, how we, you know, discuss which types of therapy or exercises would be appropriate or relevant for different circuits.
I really like that, how Groff's work sort of focuses specifically on the psychedelic experience. The eight circuit model sort of zooms back a little bit to incorporate all these other things. Yeah. What are some of those things? Yeah.
Just different modalities. And I always like to, even if clients don't realize where this comes from, like Antero Ali, like circuit one is a pre-verbal state, right? And trauma, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the book, The Body Keeps Score, and how trauma is stored in the body, and especially from when it's like from a pre-verbal state, when you're an infant, you know, it's not something you necessarily can in talk therapy access just by talking about it. But like that is, are you familiar with, I'm sure you are, No Form? So Antero Ali has that paratheater moving Zazen meditation, where it just, to me, like you go into this space where you're sort of allowing your body to communicate non-verbally, and you can express, you can let it, you know, express these traumas in, whether it's, you know, whatever that might be. It could be dance. It could be just moving erratically, punching something, screaming. It's just finding ways to let your body communicate in ways that it's before language. So there's something really beautiful in that act. And I think a lot of that working with, so what my role with MAPS is watching the MDMA sessions, and they do apply a lot of these types of things like internal family systems, where you access different parts, and then a lot of thematic work. And so it could be screaming into a pillow or punching at something, pushing at something, but it's finding ways to release pent up traumas that are stored in your body. In ways that in traditional talk therapy, you know, you could talk about it all day, but how is it going to change? You need to be able to release it and transform it, to be able to sit with it and allow it to kind of pass through in some way, to move through it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you guys are doing now. You know, you have the book out, Eight Circuit Ascension. Everyone should go pick up a copy right now. But, you know, this book is based on experience, and you guys run your own sessions, but as you said, Rachel, you're working on, you know, different assessment sort of tools for all this. What's your vision for, first of all, what are you guys doing in terms of your sessions, if you will, or what are you about with that? But what's your vision for the future? Where do you want to take your work?
Yeah, on an individual level, where I'm going and what I do, I am facilitating psychedelic psilocybin journeys. So psilocybin, specifically psilocybe cubensis, is the only legal psilocybin mushroom in Oregon. So facilitating journeys with that, both individual journeys, one-on-one, as well as group sessions. Coming from my clinical background in integrative neuro rehab, so moving into a realm of also psychedelic assisted neuro rehab, psychedelics increase neuroplasticity and open up what are called critical windows of neuroplasticity, where the nervous system and the body is very receptive to incoming information. And so taking a look at how that might be able to be useful for individuals who have had things like brain injury and stroke in terms of their physical recovery. So not just working through emotional traumas, but also physical traumas that they may have experienced. So very blessed to work in all of those realms. Do group work with the Integrative Psychiatry Institute, which is really profound as part of their psychedelic assisted therapy program. And yeah, like Rachel said, it's just, it's incredible to watch those experiences and be able to hold space. And it's a real honor, to see people doing such deep work. You know, it's the courage that it takes to really get in there and do that work, on their end, but also to be able to hold space with that. It's just, it's been incredible.
Right. And, you know, I guess this is where you include your studies of the holonomic theory of consciousness, when you work, say, with stroke victims and whatnot, who maybe have a part of their brain that has, you know, quote unquote, gone, I don't know, dead, that might not be the right word, but I guess that's the notion of the holonomic theory, you know, based on the holonomic holographic brain theory in a way, right? Mm-hmm. That if a part of your neuroscientists have found that a part of the brain that we normally associate with a certain, you know, action or behavior is shut off, people can relearn, right?
Yeah. I mean, the brain naturally works to compensate after an injury. You know, if there's one area that sort of goes offline or is so badly injured that it's not making the connections or those connections become severed for whatever reason, the body adapts and tries to do that as best as possible. The more, you know, that's what neuro rehab is really focused on, is allowing for those compensations when it's necessary, or healing those particular areas if while there's still sort of time, and the psychedelic potential to reopen that window where the body is receptive to rehealing those areas is really, really fascinating realm. But yeah, the holonomic model of the brain, and that, you know, nothing really works in isolation. Old models of the brain were like, you have the occipital lobe and you have your frontal lobe, and they're all kind of doing their own thing. And then there was more understanding about how they communicate. And then about a decade or so ago, like, they did the Human Connectome Project, which was a big collaborative effort among a lot of different universities to basically map the, not only the structural connections between different areas of the brain, but the functional connections as well. So even though there's not necessarily, like, they can't draw a straight line of there's white matter that goes from here to here, the model of the brain has become much more complex. And now it's, you know, we kind of started early on with these metaphors of circuits, and then it went into a more isolationist perspective of things, of these different areas and the true in brain of working through, now it's much more of a systems approach where everything is really communicating amongst each other, and there are particular lines of communication that happen. But it's this giant network, and that's where a lot of my work is knowing where those are and how to best help somebody kind of reestablish or optimize.
Sure. Yeah, that's great, man. And also, yeah, the Human Connectome Project, there's a wonderful website, right, where people can see the work. Yeah. It's a really cool website, how you could just move around sort of non-linearly throughout the brain, right? Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Yeah. And Rachel, what are you up to these days in terms of, you know, psychedelic work?
So on a personal level, I'm still doing my postdoctoral training. And so that is overall just regular talk therapy. But I have they are open to, if, you know, there are people interested in psychedelic integration work, or again, we have to kind of come from, it's not legal yet, right? So a harm reduction model. I'm fortunate enough too, though, that my postdoc is in Cambridge, where it is also, like in Oregon, decriminalized. So people who might have these experiences might want to seek out a provider who can work with them and help them to explore those kinds of experiences. Ketamine, of course, which is what my training with, I did a training in ketamine assisted therapy with Sage Institute in, formerly Sage Institute in Oakland. It's now called Alchemy Community Therapy Center. So I offer on a, because again, I'm not yet licensed as a therapist. So I offer psychedelic integration coaching and guidance with ketamine. So in which, you know, I'm able to apply this model in very useful ways. And to kind of go back to the second part of your question about where we're going with this, mm-hmm. Is, well, we're currently in the process of recording our course. It's a two-part course, and we also have two organizations. Eighth Circuit Ascension is kind of geared more towards the spiritual folks, people kind of coming from that more metaphysical, psychonautic kind of place. And then the Institute of Applied Metaprogramming, and that is our organization that's just geared more towards academia. And hence, like I said, we're developing these assessments. We have some research ideas we'd like to look at, other types of clinical applications. Just recently, we already co-authored a paper on the Eighth Circuit model, actually, that's already out. And then I have a paper that I'm co-authoring with the same co-author from that paper. And we discussed this. So Doug, is it okay to like let the cat out of the bag for the bigger vision? We'd like to have an actual site where there's different rooms that each room is devoted to a different circuit, right? So you want to reimprint and work with circuit one, it's going to have a certain type of setup, right? It's going to very much reflect like the womb or that, you know, mothering experience, you know, and every room for each circuit would have a setup that is, and, you know, different devices and technologies and things that would be conducive to that experience. So that's sort of where we're going. But again, like in the meantime, we are working on the course. We have it. We're starting to record it. We have to go obviously through the editing process. We have two tiers for each of those, whether it's Eighth Circuit Ascension or the Institute of Applied Metaprogramming. The first being a certification to whether it's you're just interested to work with it for yourself or to be able to hold space for another person. And then the second tier being the master practitioner metaprogrammer, where we offer the full toolkit if you want to be able to actually teach this to other people. So we go a little deeper into, you know, the research and all the different resources that we have, and we share those with other people to share and make sure that they're up to a certain standard to be able to share that and teach that to others. Oh, and in the meantime, also, we're setting up, right, Doug? So we're setting up a Patreon. So we'd like to be able to offer, in the meantime, some more direct services to people. And also, just recently, let the cat out of the bag, I'm working with David J. Brown and Sarah Finn Huntley, who just put out their the Illustrative Field Guide to DMT Entities.
I got my copy.
So, because I did my dissertation on Rick Strassman's studies. And so they were amazingly, they included me as a consultant in their work from the beginning. And when I first saw Sarah's initial illustrations, I was just like, this is stunning. And this needs to be an Oracle deck. So sort of planted that seed. And then fast forward to as it was going into print, revisited it. So we're working on an Oracle deck for DMT entities, but we're collaborating and we're basing it in the Eighth Circuit model. So we're categorizing the different DMT entities according to the different circuit experiences. So just putting that out there. And also Doug has books on that he's recently written in the past year or so on the Eighth Circuit model and the I Ching and the runes.
That would be really cool to see that play out, like different rooms for the different circuits. And I really like that
setting component, you know, setting dose, lock in that setting component, depending on what type of work, what that intention is.
Groff had the term, you know, internal navigator, right? So it's your internal navigator that, as opposed to say some outward God, that's sort of like, it's your internal source connection. And maybe that's the voice of the metal programmer, right? You know, it's very important to
shift from an external locus of control to an internal one. You know, you're becoming much more consciously aware of your internal processes and how much control you have over that.
Or lack of, which I think is a beautiful part of it, is, again, so the alchemical maxim, right? Solve et coagula, it's to dissolve and then, you know, reunite and to break something down and then put it back together. So circuit six, you sort of take that. And especially when it's enhanced with something like psychedelics, where it kind of scrambles your previous, you know, crystallized experiences of reality and allows you to sort of, you know, re-piece together or, you know, erase, not erase so much, but like, you know, just figure out like what has value, what doesn't, what aligns with who you authentically are or want to be, what doesn't, and allows you to kind of reconfigure yourself. And or, you know, especially with like, you know, like informal role is to be able to, when I say guide, of course, is always like letting the person experiencing the, whether it's psychedelic or whatever it is, they're in control always, but to be able to kind of guide that process where it's helping somebody figure out what really is in alignment with their authentic self and then how to piece that back together.
And what's the emphasis then, on the integration process in your guys' work? Because that seems to be just as important as the experience itself. Have you guys found, say, Doug, personally working with anyone in particular or people in general, like that time period, you know, what advice would you or suggestions would you give people after major psychedelic events?
The hermit phase. Yeah. So we refer to that in our book as sort of the hermit phase right after a psychedelic journey, where it can be helpful to sort of hermitize yourself or take some time to really reflect for introspective, and, you know, try to get an introspective perspective on what that experience is or what you may be able to do with that. Integration is huge, whether or not it be a psychedelic journey or altered states of consciousness through whatever means, you know, meditation or whatever, holotropic breathwork or whatever you're doing. I think that's really where a lot of the Eighth Circuit model holds a lot of potential, is that, you know, while you're in a psychedelic space or in an altered state of consciousness, there, like you said, you're not thinking about different models in your brain. You're just living that experience. You're in it. And then it's what you do after that with those epiphanies, with that experience. You know, you have that, neurobiologically speaking, you have that window of sort of influence or neuroplasticity happening. And so, like I said, your body, your brain, your nervous system is really receptive to a lot of different things. And that's really the time frame where you have this opportunity to make the most out of that psychedelic journey or that altered state of consciousness. And so the Eighth Circuit model has a lot to lend in terms of a framework to parse that out or make sense of what sort of material came up, where that fits in, and then different ways to be able to approach that. That's where the different, you know, whether it be psychological models to be working with people or the exercises that you can do on your own, different ways to really help either reinforce or continue to approach a particular hangup that may have come up. You know, you have a circuit one experience that really comes to the surface during that state. You know, then what do you do with it? And what does that mean? And I think that's really where the Eighth Circuit model comes into play really significantly in terms of being able to add context and meaning to that direct experience.
The book is Eighth Circuit Ascension. It's available now. Go out, do yourself a favor, buy this book, read this book, and engage with it. So guys, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you again to Rachel and Douglas. And be sure to check out Eighth Circuit Ascension on Original Falcon Press and all major book outlets. Also, be sure to check out my book, Chapel Perilous, The Life and Thought Crimes of Robert Anton Wilson, available at my website, chapelperilous.us, also at Lulu Press and Amazon.com. Until next time, y'all, peace out.
You've been listening to the Propanon Podcast on the fucking internet.